From the frozen lands of Minnesota, two adventurers, Adam and usually Dave, battle the harshest internet connections to bring you another episode of the Digital Soup Podcast. Their opinions are unqualified, but the conversations are good.
All right, welcome back. This is episode 188 of the Digital Soup Podcast. We are tackling a super review of the 1993 classic Falling Down. I'm Dave.
I'm falling and I can't get up.
Exactly. That voice you just heard is my good friend Adam. We're going to tackle this film in a little bit. But first, Adam, right. What you been up to? I know we've got some good questions this week, but what have you been up to?
I tell you what, I set up my Raspberry Pi 4 as a DVR for a wireless IP camera.
Nice.
That's what I did. I'm using an operating system called Motion iOS, which is really lightweight, and you can basically hook up any camera to it, and it'll record it, and it'll manage your cameras and all that kind of stuff. So I'm trying that out.
Nice.
And also still... I gave myself a haircut. I guess maybe that's it.
Did you? I give myself a haircut every week.
Oh, well, unless
I'm lazy and then it's every couple weeks, but
I do get help from my wife on trimming some of the back part. But
yeah, your back hair.
Yep.
I mean the hair in the I mean the hair in the back.
Oh,
back
sure.
Of your head.
Yeah. Braids it and gives it a little shampoo, uses a horse brush on her.
What the heck? On the back of your head. Oh, I'm a lot of it today.
No, she's cut my... no.
Well, every time I've been shaving my head for, geez, it's got to be 10 years now. I don't know. It's been a long time.
So you don't even know what your hair might look like if you let it grow.
Oh, I do, because when it starts growing out, I have the old man horseshoe where the whole top is just peach fuzz. And then I've got like the sides and back will grow in, but it's not even like an even horseshoe.
Do you look like Lando's assistant?
Lando's assistant.
Yeah. On Cloud City. You're going to have to Google Lando's assistant.
Yeah, right? I'll have to look that name. Up. This is just like the typical old man, like top in the middle to the back, from the top in the back through the top in the front, hardly nothing grows. It's, you know, just old man balding. And it very much same as my grandpa. He blessed me with his hairstyle, but honestly, mine never started going until I had my back surgery.
Okay. Well, the guy's name is Lobot. You got to Google that.
Lobot. Right.
Yep. Lobot. Everybody should know who Lobot is.
Looking him up right now. Oh, hey, well, yeah, except for instead of weird cybernetic something stuck to my head, it's just hair in those areas.
This guy kind of looks like Patrick Stewart.
Kind of, yeah. Yep, he's kind of creepy looking, but yeah.
He's got his Geordie visor on backwards.
Right.
Anyway.
Kind of like that, but not quite.
Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to talk about some Falling Down today. Wait, before we do that, though, what have you been up to?
Not a whole lot. I mean, oh, you know, before I get into that, the best example of how my hair would look if I let it grow would be, you remember Kevin from The Office, the one that spills the chili? It's kind of like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Peach fuzz on top and hardly nothing up there, and the sides and back would grow in nice and full. But
so the sides are warm.
Yeah. It keeps my tops of my ears warm.
You should just go with that.
No, I can't do it.
No, grow it out really long on the sides, like long.
Yeah.
And then just wear a hat that goes all the way down to that point. Everybody will just think you have really long hair.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't. That's the thing. It's not like on the sides when it starts, you know, where there's hair versus where it stops growing really. That's kind of still up on my head a little bit. Okay. So a hat easily covers it. No one would know if I was always wearing a hat, but.
All right.
No, nope, well, can't do
good
it.
Good to know.
Yeah. For me, it's just been, you know, kind of a regular standard old week. I mean, not a back to work finally after being sick. I'm still recovering, still kind of dealing with getting my wind back and being fatigued and stuff. And then we finally Had a chance to have the burial services for my grandpa who passed in December. We did that today as we're talking. So if my voice sounds a little rough, that's why. I've been crying like crazy today. And the finality of watching him lowered into the ground and then, you know, the dirt going on and everything else is, it's heavy stuff. You know, it hits you. Yeah. So that's about it for me. Just kind of, oh, thanks. You know, it's one of those things. I mean, everyone's gone through in some fashion, and just thankful to have had a lot of years, you know, to know him and have him as a part of my life. So
that's good.
Yeah.
On that note.
Yeah. Nice happy note.
Yep. If you could bring back one discontinued item, what would it be?
Ooh, discontinued.
Mm-hmm. What has been discontinued out there? I've got my top one. It's pathetic. I'll lead off here.
Yeah, lead off.
There used to be an awesome honey mustard sauce at Buffalo Wild Wings. They removed it. We all loved it. What were you thinking?
Honey mustard.
Honey mustard sauce at Buffalo Wild Wings. Who's with me? Come on, America.
Yeah, I don't know if I've had it. I'm trying to think.
I will also add a discontinued series like Firefly.
Firefly is, that's a good one. I think that's one I would definitely agree with. There was, I'm trying to think of the name of it. There was another series. It was on like ABC and something had happened where the entire, I can't remember the name of it. The entire world had essentially blacked out for, I forget what it was, 3 minutes or 13 seconds or something like that, all at the same time. And it was, except for a small handful of people that didn't actually black out. And it was an amazing show, kind of sci-fi. It only ran for one season. I want to say it was called like Freedom something. I can't remember what it was called, but that show was
Freedom
amazing.
Freedom Prize.
Yeah. There was other ones too, like Eliza Dushku was the star, and she was, I'm blanking on all these names. Forgive me today. She was a star of the show where she worked in a morgue, and when people were murdered or whatever, they would like reach, you know, they'd wake up to her and say, help me. And she'd go back and help save them. She'd be able to rewind like one day and then have to try and solve their murder so they could rest in peace. I cannot think of the name of that show either, but that was really good and got canceled way too early.
There's probably 1,000 shows that have been canceled.
Yeah.
That have fans. Are Twinkies, did they ever bring those back?
They're still around. They're still around.
I thought they had ended them.
No, they might still be old stock. I mean, they last forever, but no, you can find them like here in Minnesota. If you go to like a Holiday gas station, especially, they carry Hostess brand stuff and you'll find Twinkies. They've got the fudge dipped Twinkie, like fudge covered Twinkies as well. And those are a gut bomb. Can't eat those.
You know what? This could be a top 10 episode in and of itself, just it to could. Talk about the top 10 discontinued products that people wish were back.
I mean, you could actually have a couple different lists because you could have like products. I mean, like gaming systems. You could have actual like toys, products, movies, TV shows, foods, all that.
But a lot of things are discontinued that, you know,
were
like
replaced.
A gaming system that might be is replaced. Yeah.
But there's some. What about like the Sega Dreamcast? That's a great example of one that never was replaced, essentially got discontinued because it got pirated out of business and lost ground so badly so quickly because it was super easy to hack it. And that was a great little system that unfortunately never saw its full potential, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I am Jason running out really of ideas.
Jason could weigh in on the Dreamcast for us. But.
Yep.
Speaking of that, I mean, Jason, we would bring him. He kind of got discontinued here. But we would bring him back in our. You know, he if we could bring him back, you know, we wouldn't have discontinued him.
Well, he's still technically.
He kind of discontinued himself.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. But no, that's just joking around.
I'm going to say Gerbil pants, maybe some Z Cavaricci, Jordache.
Gerbil pants.
Gerbil, not Gerbil.
What are you talking about?
Do you remember the Gerbil, like the brand Gerbil back in high school?
I don't.
Oh, man.
I wasn't stylish enough, I guess. I recognize the Z Cavaricci, but I've always grown up just a Wranglers guy.
Yeah, Wranglers. Levi's for this guy.
Yeah.
If movie titles could be taken literally, or were taken literally, what blockbuster film would suddenly be the most boring?
Oh, boy. Like, one that comes to mind relatively quickly is a film like Adam Sandler's. I remember when they made the film Grown Ups.
Yes.
A film like that where, you know, the actual movie was them going through this midlife crisis, having a big adventure and stuff, but actual movie about grown-ups would be like just people paying bills and going to work and really doing nothing.
That's like regular life.
Right.
That is kind of boring. Yeah. We already have that. It's called YouTube.
Right.
I think of this one from Mark Wahlberg. Transformer. It's a movie about actual Transformers up on the power lines. It's amazing.
Yep. Electricity. Jesse might like that.
Men in Black could just be like guys wearing black outfits.
Yeah. Or, I don't mean to get a little racy here, but maybe it would be oversized women wearing spandex and yoga pants.
What?
Like a trip to Walmart where they're dressed all in black because black is slimming, but they're still cramming themselves into spandex.
It's Men in Black.
I know, but it could be, there's women in black in the new Men in Black movie. It's Chris Hemsworth and what's her name?
you lost me on that one.
Tessa Thompson.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe just a big fat dude.
Yeah, Jaws could just be about Jaws.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think, like, what about films like, you know, in the fantasy genre, like Lord of the Rings? Mm. Or something, or, you know, something like that, where if it was taken literally. Now, that's not really a great example. Some of them work well, like Groundhog Day. I mean, that one really was pretty literal, you know.
Spider-Man's just about a guy who collects spiders.
Yeah, he's, what do they call a arachnid? Like a zoologist, but
yeah, some kind of ologist.
Someone that studies those.
Some sort of ologist. We're so smart here on the We Are Good podcast. There'd be some kind of ologist studying all them spiders. Good Lord.
Right. Oh, what else? Well,
The Shining, it's just about somebody literally polishing something. I don't know.
Well, see, when I hear the words shining, I always think of something that, you know, a lot of illegal backwoods people will do, and that's poaching deer and animals.
Oh,
you know,
shining.
Like they'll go out after dark. Yeah, blind them with a spotlight and then shoot them illegally. So it's just a bunch of rednecks out shining deer.
Parasite's just about some kind of worm.
Yeah. Well, even the movie we're going to talk about today, Falling Down.
It's just a guy falling over.
Just someone that's every 2 minutes they keep falling down. So let me put a twist on this for you. I'm going to read you a few of these, see what you think. What if the film titles were changed to a more literal version of what the movie was about? So for example, Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, what if they change it to what the movie was literally about? So it'd be something along the lines of Dinosaurs in a Park, Not in a Cage.
How about, that's the actual title?
Yeah.
Dinosaurs in a Park, Not in a Cage.
Yep. How about this one? The Fast and the Furious would now be known as Some Cars on a Road.
Sounds like Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, it could be. That's a very literal one.
So
okay.
How about turn Snakes on a Plane into a verb? Will you Snakes on a Plane this title?
Yeah. That's the challenge. Snakes on a Plane challenge. What about Forrest Gump? That could be renamed to Man with Subpar Intelligence Has a Lot of Random Luck.
That covers a lot of other movies, though.
True. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Yep. Man with Subpar Intelligence.
Also known as Children Die in a Chocolate Factory.
Yeah. Crazy murdering tycoon of the candy overlord world decides to take out children one by one.
Yeah.
Using his team of small people.
How about Saving Private Ryan? You could rename that to Tom Hanks Saves Matt Damon. Matt Damon needs a lot of saving because Interstellar could also just be McConaughey Saves Damon.
Oh, can we save Damon this movie?
Yeah, saves Damon.
Robin Williams saves Matt Damon in Goodwill
Hunting. Goodwill Hunting. The Martian could be the Earth saves Matt Damon.
Science. Yeah. Science saves Matt Damon.
Yeah. Here, tell me what movie you think this is. Homegrown terrorist radicalized by old man in a cave destroys government installation.
What?
Yep. Homegrown terrorist radicalized by old man in cave destroys government installation.
I have no idea.
Welcome to Star Wars, A New Hope. Man's day replays until he sleeps with Andy McDowell.
Oh, Groundhog Day. Groundhog Day.
Yeah, really big shark. That's Jaws.
Man's day replays until he sleeps with Emily Blunt.
I don't know. What movie is that, Emily? Oh,
Edge of Tomorrow.
Edge of Tomorrow, yeah. Yeah. Man doesn't climb on driftwood and drowns.
Titanic.
Yeah. Your toys are alive. Toy Story.
Yep.
Nice. Oh, that's good stuff.
So what's the dumbest way you've ever injured yourself?
Oh, man.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, where do I start?
I was harvesting a beaver skull.
No, there's a lot of them in the woods,
though. My SD card reader in there, because
there's a lot of them in the woods, I'll be honest with you. Last winter, was it? Yeah,
most of them are in the woods.
Yeah, just this past winter, end of November, beginning, it is about Thanksgiving weekend, I think. Was out pulling some deer stands out of the woods, and we use, especially now that my daughter's going out hunting with us, we started buying these real big-sized two-man ladder stands that are like 20 feet tall, sure, but super solid. They're really heavy. You know, we're talking 130 pounds, 140 pounds. As we're letting this stand out of the tree, I wasn't watching where my foot was, and I had to kind of hold the feet in place so it didn't kick up and hit us, you know? But I had my one foot kind of hooked inside the ladder instead of on the outside where it should have been, mm-hmm, and was lowering it, and it slipped and the whole thing went down and the ladder kicked out to the side. My foot went with it and was almost shoulder height. And I felt, ooh, like all my groin muscles just felt like they got ripped to shreds. I was I limped around for a good month after that. That was just stupid, not paying attention where my feet were.
So you did the kickboxer how to do the splits training move.
Essentially, yeah.
Where you force yourself into a split instead of using actual medical and physiological science.
Basically, science. Yeah. That's the year before.
We got multiple stories.
Oh, folks, man. I've had so many injuries. Year before, I tore all the ligaments in my lower back picking up a ladder stand. It was all down, and I had bent underneath it, was standing up, and my dad said it sounded like someone just stepped on a brush pile, like cracking, and I couldn't move. I was like, oh,
you got a case of the brush pile back, yeah, there, boy.
I said, help me just take this off, and I couldn't even stand up, and I barely got out of the woods. That was painful. Just a lot of things like that, yeah.
So far, 100% of your stories have been ladder-related.
Well, in the woods, yeah. I mean, there's been times I remember we were, this was years ago, my dad and I were, and this wasn't really me injuring myself. It was kind of me protecting my nephew, who was only about 9 or 10 at the time. He was out in the woods with us, and we were knocking down some smaller trees and stuff on some land to clear out around a deer stand. And we were cutting the one tree down. Everything, I mean, my dad knows what he's doing with a chainsaw, so everything was right, and there's no reason it should have happened, just a freak thing. The tree came back and it was going to fall right on top of my nephew, and I dove over him and took the brunt of the tree right between my shoulder blades and like bent over at the waist, covering him, making a shell over him. Took a tree right on, jeez, my back. I mean, just things like that.
But saving somebody's not a dumb way to,
yeah, that,
yourself,
wasn't really like, I didn't injure myself, but it's not all ladders, but just things like that. I know the worst concussion I had when I played football, that was my own fault, because I came up, this was about, I don't know, 5 minutes into the first quarter, and we were playing down like Wilmer or somewhere like that in Minnesota, And most of our team had went out the night before. A whole bunch of the guys just got hammered. They were all hung over. Our coach found out and was just mad. And so he was making us literally run the exact same play every single play. The other team caught on right away. He wouldn't let us change it because he was punishing the guys that went out, even though most, you know, there's a good chunk of us that we didn't go out. You know, we were just suffering for it. So I came off, fired off the line. My job as the center was to go up and block the middle linebacker because it was a run to the right side. And this linebacker was small, and I was getting frustrated. We had to do this. I was getting, you know, mad at these other players. And I got down real low. And it was a big hit. I mean, a super awesome block. It looked amazing on video. Too bad I don't remember anything for the next week. But I came up, and I just got in perfect position. But I came up and just hit him so hard. But my forehead of my helmet hit him right under his chin of his helmet. He just launched in the air. And then I had to have players, you know, teammates help me back to the huddle. I played the whole rest of that half. This was in the first quarter. Played the whole rest of the half. The coach thought I was just hung over. You know, I hadn't went out. And here I had given myself a very bad concussion. Couldn't see at times. Like, I was telling the guys, they had to help me back to the huddle because I was like, I can't see anything. I don't know where I am. And I played a whole half, but I don't remember anything for a good week after that.
Reminds me of there's a movie. What was it? Not Another Teen Movie, where the football guy can only take like one more hit, but they keep back in.
Yeah. That big dude, you've seen him lately? Ethan Suplee?
Oh, that wasn't him in that particular movie, but he was in the real
one. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He was in the real one.
Yeah, that dude's just massive beast now.
Yeah, he made a total lifestyle change, and he's just in amazing like bodybuilder shape. It's crazy. Yeah, looks like a totally different person. Yeah, that's right. I forgot that was that other guy. He's that other guy from Not Another Teen Movie. I think he died.
Oh, really?
I think he's dead in real life. I think he passed away just a few years ago now.
Oh,
yeah. Well, how about you?
My dumb one was knife involved.
Uh-oh.
Which is
butterfly knife?
No. This is one of those Marine Corps knives. It's like a K-bar.
Oh, sure. Yep.
They're really cool knives. So when I was a teenager, I had one. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is cool. And, you know, we lived out in the woods. My parents, we were raised with knives and how to use them properly and safely and all that stuff. I was sitting on my bed watching TV. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting like cross-legged, and I've got a pop bottle, you know, sitting there with me. And I'm just kind of tinkering around with this knife watching TV.
Right.
I put the tip of the blade on the top, on like the pop cap of the bottle.
Okay.
And I rest my chin on the hilt of the knife, on the butt of the knife.
Oh, no.
And I'm holding the pop bottle, you know, around the bottle cap.
Yeah.
And I'm just looking at the TV, and I don't know if there was a noise or something, but I turn my head and the knife slips off and I just stab right through my hand.
Oh my gosh. Stitches.
And I pulled it out. I'm like, wow, there's no blood. And then all of a sudden there was, and just it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Like, it didn't go all the way through like to the outside, but it was poking. It's the disgusting.
Oh man.
I still have the scar to this day, of course. And it was so stupid. I'm like, what was that?
How old were you then?
Oh, 14.
Oh, okay. I was a little dumb. I was a little younger, probably around 10. But that made me think of when I am looking at my thumb, and I've got one thumb. It's a little misshapen, not horribly, weirdly so, but if you look close, you can see it. There's still a faint scar. I was, you know, the really good, like our parents always used to have them, like the really nice sharp fabric scissors, you know, like the Fiskars, the orange handle. I mean, they're razor sharp. And for whatever reason, I don't know what I was doing, but I was trying to cut a rubber band with those scissors. And something happened as I was holding the rubber band. The scissors, like the rubber band, like lurched, like it didn't cut. It like bent, you know, like stretched or something weird happened. Before I knew what happened, I'd cut through it was on my left hand. And so the outside of my thumb, you know, towards your right hand, right at the corner, like by your knuckle, it had cut all the way from there through the nail and almost cut the whole corner, like the outer right corner of my left thumb, almost off. It was just hanging there right to the bone. And as the same thing, when you said that, I was like, oh yeah, there, you know, I remember feeling like it didn't even hurt at first. And I was like, wow, that's going to, what? It doesn't hurt. There's no blood. And all of a sudden just started gushing. I held the two parts together, got rushed to the hospital. Thankfully
they stitched it up. Sorry, listeners, if you're getting queasy here.
Yeah. But the weird thing is, like, my thumbnail, everything grew back together, and there's just a very, very faint scar on the skin right at the back corner of the nail.
Wow.
Yeah, it made me think of that. I've injured myself a lot of dumb ways.
Yeah, most guys have.
Yeah.
It's because we're always thinking that we can do something.
Yeah, I don't know what I was doing cutting a rubber band in the first place, but.
All right, last question, and this one's mostly for you. What accessory has added the most impact to your photography? Like, sometimes we'll buy something and we don't realize how awesome it is or how much use we're going to get out of it until we actually start using it. Is there anything in your photography stuff that has had that impact?
Probably two things for me that if I don't use them every time I'm out shooting, but it definitely are the two most important things other than the camera and lenses. And what they were, first off, was investing in a good tripod that's real good, solid. It's not wobbly or anything else. Cause I bought some, you know, cheaper ones when I was just getting into it. Cause I don't shoot off a tripod a ton.
Sure.
But when I finally invested in a good tripod, I mean, this is 10 years ago or more now, it was a life changer, you know, when it came to photography, because you could, whatever you put on there camera wise, it was just locked down and solid. And now I use that all the time for primarily my real estate stuff when I'm shooting that, because I can lock it down, really fine tune the angles, make sure all my vertical lines are perfect, you know, and everything else. The other thing, I bought it more when I used to shoot a lot more portraits and do a lot of off camera lighting work and stuff like that. It was something called an Expo disc. It's a little custom white balance tool. And basically what it would do, it's kind of like a frosted glass prism. So it allows the color of the light through, but it doesn't, you know, you can't see through it. And before you'd shoot portrait sessions, if you're working with mixed lighting conditions or with flashes or different things like that, you would hold this thing in front of the lens of your camera and go into your settings on your camera to do a custom white balance read. And it would read the color of the light and just perfectly balance it out for you in camera, which made your editing on the backside super easy. Now, when I stopped shooting as many portraits, I hadn't used it in years, but I realized that, again, with the real estate stuff I'm doing, it works so well because you're often dealing with kind of that warm light inside from lamps and, you know, overhead lights, and the daylight outside, which is much cooler temperature. So that it really lets you help balance that light super easy.
Oh, that's
so probably awesome. The Expo disc and a tripod. What have you found?
Gosh, most impact for me has been probably just the getting something beyond just the kit lens. I think a lot of people buy a DSLR camera and it comes with a lens and you're like, oh, awesome. I can probably start shooting weddings at this point. But the first lens I bought was one of those knockoff nifty 50s, like 55 millimeter.
Yep.
Fixed prime lens.
Yep.
And just the difference between that and the kit lens that I've got is like night and day. Whereas this is like the preferred, you could do more with it.
Right.
Even though it's a prime lens.
Well,
so that kind of opened up the world to understanding the different settings and everything for me. So that's what made it for me more enjoyable.
That
I
is
get the bokeh I wanted.
Well, and not only the bokeh, but
the bokeh I deserve.
Right. Well, not only that, but it really, I really feel like I'm primarily a prime lens shooter. I only own one zoom lens that I rarely ever use, but I shoot all fixed focal length prime lenses.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I feel like, you know, and I know it's kind of controversial, but I feel like it's such an important thing because when you start doing that, it really helps you understand what you're seeing as you're looking through a scene. So, you know, there's a very different perspective you get if you're looking at 50 millimeters versus 14.
Huge.
You know, or even 35 to 50 to 85 or whatever it is. And with that prime lens, it forces you to really understand that focal length and learn how to see in that range so that you're not just standing in the same spot, zooming in and out. It forces you to move and kind of reposition yourself in a scene to get the best angles. And you really start to, you know, understand on a much deeper level what your focal length is doing in terms of your composition and everything else.
We should insert the "you the more you know" sound right, yeah, at the end of that.
I seen that. You remember the old G.I. Joe, you know, and now you know it. Knowing is half the battle.
Knowing is half the battle.
Yeah. And then I seen this meme the other day. It said, "And knowing is half the battle," and had the picture of the G.I. Joe thing. Yes. And then right under it was a very serious picture of a G.I. Joe, one of the characters, saying, "The other half is extreme violence."
Pork chop sandwiches. Anyway, if you don't know that reference, somebody out there listening will.
Sorry, I was coughing there. Okay. Yeah, it cracked me up so hard. I sent that over to a friend of the show, Mac, here, and he was just like, yes, I love it. Because knowing is half the battle, but violence is the other half. You want one more question?
Sure.
I'm not going to hit you with the one we were joking about pre-show. Okay. What I am going to say is, how much is too much?
How much is too much?
Yeah.
The point where it starts harming you more than benefiting you.
Oh, okay.
I don't even know what we're talking about, but that's what I blurted out. It's all about finding balance, whether it's food, which I am terrible at.
Right.
Or work-life balance, whatever. If something is detrimental to you and you thought it was good, now you've done too much.
Yeah. I like it. That's a good way to answer. Keeping the balance. Just
Mr.
enough.
Mr. Miyagi taught Daniel's son how to balance on the front of a dang boat. So, I mean.
Right. This is true.
What's your answer?
I don't know. I didn't.
Okay. That was just for me. All right.
It was just for you. You gave me the photography one. I wanted to know from you how much was too much.
Too much. I don't know.
Little Dave Matthews. Bring too much. He's not that bad.
Again, I do have a Dave Matthews song on my playlist, and I always liked Crash.
You have a Dave Matthews song on a playlist. I have a Dave Matthews playlist.
We can tell by looking at you.
Yeah, I do, and I enjoy me some Dave Matthews, man.
No, it's good. Let's do some recommendations, speaking of playlists.
And now, Digital Soup Recommendations.
All right. This first one, I'm doubting you've clicked on this link yet, rave.dj. This is my recommendation this week.
Okay.
This is a pretty incredible and also kind of funny website where you can search for songs, pick two songs, and their AI, and this takes well over a minute to do, AI will mash them together and create like a mashup video. Like you can find two YouTube videos of songs and it's going to do a mashup for you.
No kidding.
I'm not kidding. It's actually pretty impressive. I actually saw this on Reddit yesterday or this morning, I should say. And I clicked on it. I'm like, well, this is going to be dumb. It's going to, this is awesome. Yeah. So I did mine of All I Do Is Win by DJ Khaled and a combination of that and Man of Constant Sorrow from the Oh Brother, Where Art Thou soundtrack. It didn't come out half bad. So I was like, you know
that
what?
That is awesome. I know what I'm doing rave.dj. After we're done.
Oh, it's cool. And you can share them out and everything. It's pretty awesome.
Really?
Rave.dj. Yeah, I've never seen anything like that. Rave.dj. That's use AI cool. to mix two of your favorite songs together. And they've got a bunch of trending mashups on there.
Nice. Do you remember, I don't know if Jason ever did this for you, but back in the days of like Napster, he would search out and find like just these hilarious mashup songs that at the time were kind of rudimentary. People were just getting into that. Did he ever used to find those and like make you burn, you know, mix CDs of all these weird mashups?
No, never.
Oh my God. He used to throw them in so often for me. The one that always cracked me up the most, it was a mashup of the song called So What by Metallica with a Britney Spears song, Crazy, I think it was. And it was, I mean, very, I can't say the words because I don't want to drop an F-bomb, but it'd be like, so effing crazy. What? And then they'd just get back into it. It was just hilarious. He used to find the funniest stuff.
Oh, he probably still does. He still
sends it to us. He has a knack for finding that just absurdly hilarious stuff.
Okay. All right. What do you got for us this week?
Well, I've got another podcast. Now, this yes. This is
only
one
us.
Well, this is one for the real cinema and film fans out there, movie fans.
Okay.
It is called the Team Deacons podcast, like Team TEAM. Deacons, DEAKINS. I have it linked up in the show notes. Deacons referring to Roger Deakins, the legendary cinematographer, the man behind films like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, Fargo, No Country for Old Men, Sicario. I mean, the list goes on. He did Blade Runner 2049.
Oh, wow.
James Bond Skyfall, 007 Skyfall. I mean, he's done some just massive movies. The guy is just a freaking genius when it comes to cinematography. And this show is him and his wife who works with him, and they are talking all about his process with filmmaking, how he views lighting, how he views like composition and storytelling and, you know, all this stuff. And then he's just an open book with it. It's relatively new. I think they're only 5 or 6 episodes in, something like that. But the amount of information, if you're a fan of film or even as a photographer, there's so much to learn from this guy. And it's just a fascinating look behind the scenes of some of the biggest movies that you've seen.
Awesome. That sounds pretty good.
Cool. Yeah, it's pretty awesome if you want to nerd out about some kind of in-depth movie stuff.
Well, we're not nerds, so.
I am.
Today's additions to the Digital Soup Spotify playlist, I am bringing The Funeral by Band of Horses. This is, how would you describe this song? It's kind of like Americana rock.
A
lot of heavy reverb on it. This song's not super new, but it's kind of cool.
Yeah. I don't know how you would describe that. You just got to listen to
the playlist, folks. Listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. It's right on the front page of our website. If you don't want to look for it, you can find it right there. But
that's right.
Yeah, it's just a cool vibe, kind of that, like you said, Americana folk, but kind of
It's got rock.
It's got kind of indie rock also a little bit.
Yeah.
That looser feeling. Yeah, very cool.
No, your pick is not indie rock.
No, I went super classic.
I want my
Ooh, exactly. I went
got
classic.
To the top of the range and died.
I went classic. I was jamming out over the weekend for a little while to an 80s playlist while we were working on some stuff at the house here.
Look at that.
Yeah, and this song, Money for Nothing by Dire Straits, it's still, especially if you just crank it up, that intro comes in, then the epic drum, you know, kind of fill type thing. Yeah, it's just all echoey and reverby. And then that guitar riff, everything builds right up to that guitar riff. And it is just one of the most perfect guitar riffs, guitar sounds, just amazing. And it just kicks right in. And I mean, everybody knows the song Money for Nothing, so I'm not going to talk about it for too long. But yeah, this is one I had on repeat a few times this weekend because I just, especially cranked up nice and loud, just loved it.
What year did this song come out?
Money for Nothing. Yeah, it's, hold on, I'll tell you. Money for Nothing was 1985 off the Brothers in Arms album.
So the reason I'm calling that out is there are some lyrics in here that would no longer fly in today's times.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Don't get offended by the lyrics. It's not that's not why we chose it. It's more just the guitar sound and the riff. And this is classic like rock music from the 80s. It's not hair metal. It's not heavy metal or hard rock. It's not glam rock. It's just good rock music.
Rock.
Yeah.
Hey, now we do have a couple of songs to add to our listener Spotify playlist.
Yes.
And so these are a couple more contributions from Jesse, our listener and friend. And so the first one is from a band called Nonpoint, and it's a song called Chaos and Earthquakes. Mm-hmm. I automatically, Dave and I both listened to this and both thought, hey, this guy sounds like POD, a reminder yeah. of POD.
Exactly.
If you're not familiar with Nonpoint, they've actually been around since the 90s. And I mean, this video just got uploaded a couple of years ago. It's got over 1 million views. They've got 55,000 subscribers. I'm like, how have I not heard of these guys? What's my problem?
Yeah, I hadn't heard of them either. And it's a pretty cool vibe on the song.
Yeah, it's a good rocking tune. And then the other song that's getting added, completely different, Scarborough Fair by Simon and Garfunkel.
Yeah. Total opposite end.
Scarborough Fair.
Now, Simon and Garfunkel, a lot of people, I mean, I think for most people, they respect their contribution to the music world and their talent. I know not everyone loves to listen to them because the music is a little hippie-ish, you know, or whatever.
The drugs aren't as good anymore.
Yeah, right. Something. It just doesn't do it for everyone. But if you're a music fan, this song or any other Simon and Garfunkel song, it is worth listening to just for how amazingly well they handle the interplay between their harmonies.
Oh, yeah. Their harmonies are unbelievable.
I mean,
is an influential song, too.
Right.
This group.
They are, not only are their harmonies, like, perfect, but they swap on the fly seamlessly. Like they'll go from one of them taking the high part to the low part and then just flip-flop it in the matter of two words, you know, boom boom, jumping all around, just doing amazing things vocally. Yes
most definitely. And it also lists several different herbs that you could use in your kitchen.
I
mean, that's good.
Yeah, good for quarantine life ideas as well.
Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Or do they mean thyme like T-I-M-E? I don't
know. Rosemary was their unrequited love.
Both of them?
Well, they, you know, they were pretty close. I'm just saying, I don't know.
She was the ampersand.
Yeah, I mean, was Paul Simon was he the one that did the later, the You Can Call Me Al or whatever? Was that him?
Yeah.
Chevy Chase in the video. I mean, maybe maybe he was just singing about a different time.
Yep. Goodness. Sheer conjecture and not truisms.
Right. A cornucopia of falsehoods, as we like to say.
So, I think it might be time to hear from us a little bit.
Hey, super friends. As you know, we don't have any fancy sponsors, but we do have some important information for you, so listen up. First, if you want to keep up with everything we're doing here at Digital Soup, including how to find us on social media, all the ways to subscribe, and even how to support the show, head to digitalsouppodcast.com. We appreciate all of your support, including sharing Digital Soup with your friends, but if you want to do more than share, hit that button that says Patreon on the site and help support the show by becoming a Digital Soup Patreon backer.
Of course, Dave and I stay busy with our own projects outside of the kitchen as well. Dave is having creativity-fueled discussions designed to motivate, inspire, and encourage you along your own adventures in creativity with the Adventures in Creativity podcast. You'll find him at AICpod.com. And if you're interested in some amazing sci-fi stories from years gone by, I've got you covered with Yesterday's Sci-Fi. These are amazing, classic sci-fi stories in an audiobook format. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to yesterdayssci-fi.com for all the details.
Man, that's a lot, huh? Well, just remember this. DigitalSoupPodcast.com, YesterdaysSciFi.com, and AICpod.com. Now then, thank you again, all of you that are listening, for taking time to join us every week, and let's get back to the show.
It gets me every time. Hold on, I gotta wipe a tear from my eye. All right, let's talk about something.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a super review for Falling Down.
Yes.
It's time for Super Reviews.
So we have to travel back to 1993 for this film, starring a much younger Michael Douglas. Now,
because it was 1993.
Well, yeah, but it was kind of weird because I think so many people today are going to look at this guy and be like, wow, that's a super young version of Hank Pym from Ant-Man. Because that's probably what it is. And that's what most people are going to recognize Michael Douglas from in today's day and age. Now, for us, we're old. We've seen him in a ton of movies. And this film, the IMDb description just says an unemployed defense worker, frustrated with the various flaws that he sees in society, begins to psychotically and violently lash out against them. Directed by Joel Schumacher, starring Michael Douglas and Robert Duvall. Now, there's other That's people right. in it as well, but they're the two big names. So the only note I made on this, you know, I was telling you pre-show, I didn't actually, usually I write down a whole bunch of notes, but this is a rewatch, so I'd seen it before. And the only note that I made that jumped out at me right away is this film opens up with this really kind of creepy, weird close-up on his mouth with like sweat dropping. And then it starts yep. pulling away further and further. And you realize it's like a super wide angle lens. And it's just showing like this, like the music's going under it and the tension. He's stuck in a car where the air conditioning isn't working. Traffic is just backed up like crazy. Annoying things everywhere, and he's stuck in this massive yep. traffic jam on the way to work.
It's the beginning of his descent into madness.
Yeah, and you see this guy, like, in that opening scene, you see him just snap. And it is, I mean, from there, it's yep. kind of a wild ride, but in that very, you know, first, what would you say, 2 minutes? Maybe 5 minutes tops? You see this guy just completely go from, oh, here's this guy on his way to work, regular office looking guy. You don't really know anything about him, to suddenly you just see mentally something just comes yep. unhinged in this guy.
He breaks while he's in the car. He can't take it anymore, whatever it was. And we find out later, of course, that he lost his job like a month prior. So we don't right. know what he was doing.
right.
But that's the societal pressures of whatever. Yeah, it's he lost it all right.
Yeah, and all he wants to do is get home to see his kid. It's her birthday. Yep.
And he's downright scary in this movie.
At you know, times.
Because it's like he starts a descent.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem so bad at first. First, it's like, okay, this guy's kind of snapped. And, you know, he's just mad he can't get another quarter.
Right.
So he just kind of bashes some stuff up and takes a bat. Okay.
And then pays for his Coca-Cola.
Yep. Yep, and it just kind of keeps on his descent keeps snowballing, and he's into mm-hmm. worse and worse stuff. So then he gets into the fight with that gang, Mexican gang or Latin gang, I should say, not Mexican. I don't know,
yeah,
whatever they were on the
yep
out there, and he's
can't sit on the hill.
he hits them with a bat, and then when he finally ends up, you know, killing the guy in the in the surplus shop.
Uh-huh.
It's and all of a sudden he changes into like an all black military outfit. And right. He's got all these other guns.
As they say in the film, he's dressed like a G.I. Joe.
Yep. He just keeps on getting worse and worse and worse.
Right. Well, Go ahead.
Did you enjoy the side story of Robert Duvall's character though? I was like,
You know, I remember when I first saw it, and even on the rewatch, because it had been a long time since I had seen this, and I couldn't quite remember how it ended. And I was kind of just waiting, and I think the whole thing was there because they're talking about, you know, he's retiring, and the kind of superstition in the police department is that, you know, the day you retire, your last day of work is the most dangerous one because that's when everyone gets killed, you know. Police officers tend to die. And I was waiting to see, like, I couldn't remember, especially when I first watched it. I was like, does he die or how does this play out again? I could not quite remember. And I didn't mind it because I think that I don't know if it was necessary. I mean, they could have had, what was the female cop's name? Sandy, his partner that wasn't really his partner.
Sandra, yeah.
Sandra, she gets shot. They could have had it be just any cop in that role. But I think that was necessary because I think it added to the tension as you saw Michael Douglas's character, Defense, as they call him. What was his name? Bill.
Bill
in the film. He, as he kind of goes down his descent into darkness, you're seeing him as this guy that at first he takes you on a journey where it's like, man, I feel for this guy. He just wants to be home with his family. He's trying to get there for this birthday party and everything keeps going wrong. And, you know, he keeps running into this stuff and he's lashing out and, you kind of feel for him until you realize, no, he's just a psychotic killer. You know, he never killed anyone prior to that, but you find out the family he's trying to get to, they're divorced. The wife has a restraining order against him. His parents, his mother is terrified of him. She says he looks at her and like he sometimes just wants to kill her. And you find out this guy just has some real anger issues that have been bubbling under the surface for quite some time. And it's really in today's day and age with like mental health and everything being such a prevalent topic. You look at a character like this and you realize there's so many people out in the world that are in that exact position where they seem to have their stuff together. And it could just be one little thing, like the guy in the convenience store who, you know, wants to charge him 85 cents for a can of Coca-Cola instead of 50, you know, and we're bringing these prices back to 1964. And as he's beating up the store, he's like, all right, six pack of donuts. How much is this? And wrong, bam, start smashing things. And you could see there are so many people out there today that are right on that edge. Like you never know.
Yep. Well, there was a few things in this movie where I'm like, is this like a portrayal of what we sometimes wish we could do?
Right.
Well, just that's losing it with the breakfast. It's like 2 minutes past 11:30.
We stopped serving at 11:30. And the female cashier, she seemed like she was finding it all extremely funny.
Yeah, she thought it was hilarious.
Yeah, even when he shoots into the ceiling and everyone, you know, oh, sorry. It was just a touchy trigger. I'm sorry. I did not mean to do that. And he's like, you enjoying your breakfast? You enjoying this? And he's got his monologue. And she's just got this smirk on her face the whole time. She really reminded me for some reason a lot of what's her name from Stranger Things season 3 from the ice cream shop. Ethan Hawke's daughter. I can't think of her character's name, but you know who I'm talking about. The Scooby Gang.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
That character, it's like, that's almost the same character. You know, like find this all funny.
Did the guy manager look familiar to you? He looked really familiar to me.
I don't know why, but he did. Yeah. I'm looking to see. I don't know.
What movie was he in? Rick was his name in the
Rick. This one. I'm looking to see full cast. Yeah, I don't know who that was.
That's Brent Hinckley is the name of the actor.
Let's see. Whammy Burger. But yeah, he
Whammy Burger.
Oh, he was in Silence of the Lambs, Ed Wood, Falling Down. Yeah, he was on Monk, the TV show, Carnival, the series.
Okay. You know, he kind of looks like the guy from Oh Brother Where Art though.
Oh, kind of. Yeah. The one with the lazy eye.
But that's
eye.
Tim Blake Nelson. So.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I was.
Well,
that was interesting.
He just
keeps losing it on everybody. And that, you know, in watching the movie and, you know, you and I both were young people at this time.
Yeah.
You know, 13, 14 years old when this movie came out. Just, and I haven't seen this movie since I was a teenager, I think.
Yeah.
But just the set, you know, and the time and place setting was like brings you right back.
Right. Well, and it was
classic
to me. 90s. What I thought was so interesting is, and I didn't remember this from when I watched it in the first place, but they did such a like amazing job, especially early on in the film before he gets in his military garb, where you just felt like that oppressive heat, like, oh, it's so hot. You just want to slap somebody. Like you can't take it.
Yeah.
You know, those days in the summer when they just get so miserably hot. And then that's what I mean. Like for you, at what point in this film, as he's going through all of his trials here, you know, and things keep descending into madness, at what point did you stop feeling like I said, for me, there was, you know, up to a certain point, I felt like, man, I kind of feel bad for this guy. Like he's just having a rough day.
Oh, I stopped feeling bad for him when he was having his phone call with his ex-wife and he was like, I'm coming over. And she's like, you can't.
I am.
Yeah. I was like, okay. We're good now. We've passed entertaining into you're scaring me. And that was, that's the brilliant part that Michael Douglas did in this movie is that, he's strangely intimidating, even though he's unassuming.
Right.
And it kind of reminded me of, was that No Country for Old Men? Mm-hmm. There's that scene where the guy comes up to the counter at the gas station or whatever.
Yeah. Flip the coin.
And it's just the most uncomfortable thing you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And actually No Country for Old Men, they did it better in that movie.
Yeah.
But this had like that kind of same feel of, I'm uncomfortable with this guy and what he's doing.
Right.
just really weird.
Yeah. That's the thing. I thought that this film did so brilliantly was that you start out feeling for this guy. And then even after that first time, and you start hearing a little more that they're split and he just still wants to be home, there was still a feeling at first where it's like, okay, he's kind of getting to creepy territory there, but just the thought of like, if you weren't allowed to see your kid, it's like, I could kind of understand him. He just wants to give her a present, you know, wants to see her on her birthday, and all of this is happening. And I think for me, it was when where it really started to shift was when he was in with that military surplus guy. And the guy is like, we're the same, man. And he's like, no, we're not the same. And then that guy really goes after him and ends up getting killed. You know, he kills him and stuffs him in his own display case. But at that point, it's like, okay, this guy's messed up. And then you start getting the phone calls more frequently to his wife, and she's terrified. She's had the police out there a number of times, and he hasn't shown up yet. And then
when he's really close and he calls her, and all of a sudden she realizes he's close, and all of a sudden he starts running.
Yeah, like, they take off, and you know, he's watching the old films. And even then, you had that moment when he's watching the film, the family video, where he gives the kid the dog.
Or when he's trying to get her to get on the horse.
Well, yeah, right in that area, like, you see his dark side, but then you see, like, this guy just, I think, really loves his family, but he's just mentally, he's ill. You know, he's mentally unstable. But then when he takes it, and that's why I didn't mind the side story, as you were saying, of Robert Duvall's character, you know, Detective Pendergast. I don't know about the whole thing with his wife.
It was pretty... I did like when he finally loses it on her, because everybody thinks he's a pushover. He's like,
keep the skin on that chicken.
And he uses my line of shut up.
Exactly. Let's move this bitch.
And there better be skin on that chicken. She's like, okay, well, that was actually pretty funny. Yeah, but it shows that he still got it, and, you know, staying in the right mind. And
well, and that's why I think it was such an essential role, even though it could have been any cop. But the fact that, you know, both of these guys, Robert Duvall, Detective Pendergast, and then Bill, Michael Douglas, they both have lost their kids, for lack of a better term. One is still alive.
It's a good observation.
You know, but Robert Duvall's died at like 2 years old or something, it said, and, you know, it's sudden infant death syndrome. And it happened many years ago, but he remembers that, and it was a pain that he went through. And I think you see that just as being, especially in the showdown at the end, I think they both understand. And Robert Duvall's trying to talk him out of it, saying, look, it doesn't have to be the end. And Bill, or Michael Douglas, is kind of saying, look, it does. I don't want to see her for the rest of my life behind bars. I realize what I've done and that I'm sick, and I don't want her to see me that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, so he sets him up with a squirt gun.
The imagery of him, he already took the plunge mentally, and then he takes one finally.
Right.
But,
right.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty powerful movie.
Yeah. I kind of agree with you. And a lot of people this resonated with, I remember, like, oh man, I wish I could just lose it on everybody. And it was, you know, that at that time of that part of that time in our country too, you know, with,
well, just, yeah, what was
that's where society 93, was at.
What was going on in 93? Was that around the first Gulf War or just after?
Yeah. Oh, geez.
I'm trying to think in 93 what was happening. But yeah, I mean, that when I remember it when I was younger, that was the thing that everyone focused on was, you know, oh,
just after the Gulf War.
Okay. Yeah. And I remember that where people are like, oh, I wish I could do that. I wish I could just, you know.
Especially the restaurant scene. Everyone loves the restaurant scene.
Right. Exactly. And for lack of a better term, go postal, you know. And,
yeah,
I really remember people focusing on that. But I've got to say, on a rewatch, I took something totally different away from it. Like, I felt like we've all been there where we get so frustrated with, like, stupid little rules, like the breakfast thing at the restaurant, you know. But I also was, like rewatching it, I took so much more away from it in the sense of like just how little it could take to push someone over the edge.
That's the scary part.
Right. And it was truly kind of like horrifying and also impactful. And it made me think of times when, like, you know, I've been frustrated or whatever else. And not that I'm at that point, but it makes you think about it and go like, wow, you wonder, you know, you really see the value of trying to stay present and appreciate the positive. Like Robert Duvall's character, he always had a smile, always had a laugh, you know, mm-hmm. Even though he was too young to retire, he wasn't going to get his full pension. His police chief says, you know, now that you're officially gone, I just want to tell you, I never liked you. Can't trust a cop that doesn't curse, and you never swear. And you just get this sense like he's just a good stand up guy that really just cares about people. And you see those two sides of the coin where Michael Douglas on the flip side has been just barely containing his rage all this time.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. There's a guy on IMDb that reviewed this movie. And mm-hmm. one of the things he mentioned is just, there's a lot of imagery that refers to itself in here, almost like meta imagery. And
right.
So when the Nazi has him handcuffed in the surplus store.
Yep.
He says, give me your other hand. And he's like, and he goes, no, because I'm going to fall down because of gravity.
Right.
This user says that this is a microcosm of the film and a microcosm of what may be wrong with not only society, but people in general.
Hmm.
So there's a theory in wrestling that your arms and legs are like a table. And if you take out any yeah. two of them, your opponent falls down and is vulnerable. So
right.
That's what society is doing to this guy in this way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's a pretty interesting take on it, but
yeah.
So overall, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. This was kind of an impacting movie. It's a little deeper than just like, oh, a guy snaps.
Well, and very much more than I remembered it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing for me is when I remember
we're closer to this guy's age now. That's the difference.
Right. yep, exactly. So it's one that if you're still listening and you haven't rewatched this, I don't know why you're listening, maybe, you know, whatever, but I urge you, if you haven't yet, rewatch this film because I think you're going to find it pretty fascinating. Now, from my geeky cinematography standpoint, I want to ask you, aside from, you know, like I said, that kind of real interesting use of that real wide angle lens that's shot that opened the whole film in the car, what did you think about this? Anything stand out to you from the more technical aspects of things?
I guess not necessarily. I like the way this was shot, just mm-hmm. A lot of wide angles on stuff. I don't mm-hmm. really, when I watch movies, I don't think about that stuff, but just going off my own memory.
Yep.
It reminded me a lot of like the way Terminator 2 was shot.
Okay.
I don't know why, just, you know, the way they look at the city and stuff like that.
I wonder, because wasn't that also out in like California, LA?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why it does.
It could be. And that's because I think of those scenes like in Terminator 2 when it's daytime and it's like in the desert when they're escaping for a while and loading up on weapons, or on the motorcycle chases during the daytime. It just had that same like, it's hot and sweaty and sticky.
It sucks to be here.
Yeah. Yep. That's the thing that stuck out the most to me, aside from some real interesting camera angles, was just the way that this film so brilliantly captured that feeling of like tension and mm-hmm. just not just tension, but just that feeling of like one of those days in summer. I mean, we don't get too many of them here in Minnesota, but those days where it's right. just like miserable, hot, terrible humidity, like you can't even stand being outside of air conditioning. You know, the guy in the shop, he's in there, and that shop you could just tell it was like, you know, I just imagined how gross it would have felt just to walk into that shop. Like he's sweating like crazy. You could tell everything's humid. And then like this film had a lot of like atmosphere added from like smoke just hanging in the air because of that time people were, you know, in a McDonald's smoking or whatever, you know, or at the convenience store, the guys behind the counter smoking away. And you could see just in that heat and the sweat and the miserable humidity and then just that like hazy smoke just hanging. It's like, you know, when you walked in there, it would have just hit you like, you know, a brick wall, like, oh, this is miserable. This is gross, you know?
Yep.
Yeah, that's kind of the main takeaway I had from that. So I overall, like I said, very, very fun rewatch. I really enjoyed this one.
That's awesome.
What would you rate it?
Oh, out of our soup spoons old rating?
Sure.
Or just out of the numbers? I'd give it a 3.5.
3.5 out of 5?
I'd give it a 3.5.
I'd give it, yeah. I'd almost push it to a 4 myself. Mm. Only because of how much different it impacted me on a rewatch after all these years. I think it was just really fascinating to see how much different it was than I remembered.
Yeah.
And how much more I got out of it, which is really, really, like you said, I think a lot of it's the age that, you know, our age now compared to.
But we're just looking at it through a different lens now. Right. And I think don't I sound like some kind of stupid film critic? We're looking at it through a different lens, but it's true.
Right.
I just realize how ridiculous I sound. I shouldn't say, because I don't think film critics are stupid. They are way better at this than I am. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm an amateur. Let's just get that out of the way. But.
Me too.
I do think we look at it through a different lens. And I do think that there's some movies from that time period that you rewatch and they just don't work anymore.
Right.
This one does not have that effect. This one holds up. It's good.
Absolutely.
So I'd give it a 3.5. Could easily consider a 4.
Sure.
But it's worth a watch, folks. If you haven't watched it, go check it out.
Now, this one we kind of both came up with. Technically, this one was my choice. Because you had picked the one previous, which I forget what that was, the last one. What do you want to watch next?
Avatar.
Time?
Oh boy, let's see.
Let's go
to the random movie generator and let's see what we get. Because I think that one gave us Falling Down, didn't it?
I don't know. I think we had came up with Falling Down after we ended last time. Because I'll throw a couple ideas out there for you. Since I'm in my Roger Deakins cinematography mode.
Okay.
If any of these jump out at you, there was a film he did called The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford back in 2007. Okay. He redid True Grit and also Blade Runner 2049, or brand new, which I think just came out on video on demand or streaming or whatever. I think you can find it is, have to look at this one to make sure, but 1917, his war movie.
Yeah, is that one available yet?
I can't remember if that one came out yet.
Boy, I imagine. Yeah, they've got it available right now on Vudu for $5.99 and Amazon Prime for $6.
Okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
1917?
That's one of his movies?
That's a Roger Deakins film. Unique cinematography where they filmed it all to appear as if it was one long take. I haven't seen it yet.
But he wasn't the director, though.
No, director is Sam Mendes.
Yep. Okay.
Roger Deakins is the director of photography or cinematographer.
Okay. 1917. You're going to have to check it out.
Yep.
That's got some pretty decent scores and reviews from what I recall seeing. So
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's showing IMDb is giving an 8.3 out of 10. Yeah. So.
Yep. All right. That sounds good.
1917 it is.
Yep. We're going to go back to 1917.
Well, and next week, we kind of teased it last episode. We're going to jump back in time. We're going to visit 1986, and whether we do it for one episode or a couple episodes, we'll see what we want to do. But at least next week, we're going to jump back to 1986 and check out a fun top 10 list from back in the day.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
All right. So looking forward to that. Guys, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We will catch you next week. Stay safe, stay healthy, and spay and neuter your pets.
Also, send us any music release or music suggestions for the official Super Friends playlist. And until then, guys, take care of yourselves. And like you said, spay and neuter your pets.
Yeah.
Talk to you next week.
See ya.
Thank you for joining us. And come back next week for another cracking episode of the Digital Soup Podcast. This has been a Digital Soup production.